Global Investment Outlook, Beyond the Headlines, Finding Opportunities in Today's Markets. Recorded on March 15, 2017, featuring Edward D. Perks, CFA, Chief Investment Officer, Franklin Templeton Equity, Chris Malumphy, CFA, Chief Investment Officer, Franklin Templeton Fixed Income Group, Sonal Desai, PhD, Senior Vice President, Portfolio Manager, Director of Research, Templeton Global Macro, and Stephen Dover, CFA, Chief Investment Officer, Templeton Emerging Markets Group, and Franklin Local Asset Management.
Let's get started with a refresh of what's going on in the U.S. and global economy. First, I'd like to start with you, Chris. The Fed just hiked rates. Can you outline economic conditions in the U.S. right now and what you see from the Fed going forward?
I mean, our view on the U.S. economy is pretty healthy. I mean, it's a robust environment. When you look at the labor markets, we've got unemployment in the U.S. down to 4.7%. Job growth remains fairly robust. U.S. has averaged in excess of 200,000 net new jobs a month over the past several months. Looking at consumer sentiment, it is quite strong. Business confidence has risen quite a bit. So all in all, it's a pretty positive environment. Now turning to the Fed, clearly in raising rates further, it is in many ways an affirmation of this view that the U.S. economy is in fact doing pretty well. The other thing that came out of the Fed meeting is really a return to, in some sense, to a more normalized approach to monetary policy. You know, our view in terms of looking at the Fed monetary policy moving forward is that we see the Fed, much like they tried to put forth, gradually raising rates over the next several years, and gradually meaning roughly on the order of 75 basis points or so per year until we get to a normal or neutral rate, which in the Fed's view today is roughly 3% in the U.S. So we would generally concur with that.
Thanks. Turning to you, Sonal, how does the Fed dynamics compare to what's going on in economic conditions and monetary policy across the developed world?
I'd probably just touch on the euro area and maybe Japan to just pick on a couple of the big players. What Chris was saying about the U.S., it stands in contrast to some extent with both of these other parts of the world. In the euro area, we're definitely seeing a small cyclical uptake, but nowhere to the point that we would actually envisage the ECB changing policy near term, certainly not in light of the political issues. More importantly, from the perspective of Japan, I would expect QE to actually be part and parcel of the Japanese policy package for quite a while going forward. Because if you look across the G3, in the end, there's really only one piece of the G3 which has ever been in clear and present danger of deflation, and that's Japan, and they experienced it, and they haven't broken out of it yet. So we would say that we continue to see pretty easy monetary policy in both from both Japan and the euro area. The U.S. stands apart. I'd say if you look at the U.K., that is somewhere in between. So, you know, we might see some change in policy there. They're seeing more inflation sooner in the U.K.
There's been concern around valuations of U.S. stocks given the new highs in U.S. equity markets. What do you think the drivers are going forward, and what risks would you encourage investors to monitor?
In the U.S., with the sharp increase in business and consumer sentiment, among other factors, markets generally embracing a little bit of a reflation trade and seeing accelerating growth, I think we're starting to change that perception of what ultimately will be delivered from the top line, companies' ability to maintain attractive profit margins. Clearly on that front, it's starting to look a little bit more at some of the policy shifts that potentially exist, whether it be lower taxes, reduced business regulation. All of that can be important, but I think there are risks that we have to be aware of. Reflation has with it a different side of the coin, and inflation, rising input costs, rising wage pressures, all can be problematic and an offset to some of the positives. So, I think as we move forward, we really think stocks on a relative basis still have, pretty strong appeal, and you do have to acknowledge that there is an acceleration potentially happening. But once again, not without risks that we need to monitor. I think when I look at equity markets in particular, one of the things that, clearly stands out to us this last 4 or 5 months as opposed to the prior couple of years, a little bit more differentiation, lower correlation among sectors and individual stocks, certain drivers that had existed, a strong investor preference for yield, for stability, drove certain sectors, real estate investment trusts, utilities, staples, telecom service stocks, all were good examples of that, were very strong performers and saw some elevated valuations. You know, that's pivoted a bit to stocks and sectors that maybe have a little bit more cyclical component, financials, industrials, technology, maybe even to some extent energy, although there are clearly other issues around the commodity that impact that sector. So, you know, I think ultimately it's a pretty attractive time for active management and really to be able to leverage the fundamental research we have.
How are emerging market economies faring?
They're faring well, especially when you look back at 2016. If you look at the headlines and the great concern about trade and the dollar rising and everything else, and that's all you knew, you would have thought emerging markets would have done poorly. But actually, they outperformed most of the other indexes. And I think that's part of the story about emerging markets and why they're called emerging, because they've changed so dramatically over the years. They used to be highly correlated to commodities. In fact, they were over 50% commodities 10, 15 years ago. Now they're only about 15% commodities. I don't think people realize that these markets have emerged in a way in which they're much more driven by the consumer and they're much more driven by technology. Technology, which 10 years ago was, let's say, 8% of the benchmark, is now 25%. Technology is a higher percentage of the emerging markets benchmark than any other major global benchmark. So I think emerging markets aren't the category that everyone thinks about being very trade-weighted and commodity-weighted. We're very lucky, I think, in this firm to have such a great global bond team and their views on currency, which are supportive of our view that a lot of these emerging markets currencies are undervalued. As earnings are improving, as they are, and valuations are improving in the emerging markets, the fact that those currencies are already perhaps undervalued gives us some more opportunity.
I'd like to go around the table and ask each of you to briefly highlight what you see as the biggest opportunity in your market.
Well, I would say the biggest opportunity is really understanding how the emerging markets have changed and some of the opportunities, particularly in the technology part of the business. And probably in terms of a region or an area, that's a real bright spot right now. We see that in Latin America.
We like the corporate fundamentals, and that would be investment grade, high yield, even leveraged bank loans. But I would also just mention municipal bonds, something that isn't in the forefront as much, but fundamentally, whether it's state, city, municipality, the fundamentals look good and valuations are reasonably healthy.
Thank you. Ed?
Yeah, as I think about equity markets, clearly there's a differential globally. U.S., faster growth, potential for higher earnings, higher cash flow, higher dividends. And at the same time, a bit more differentiation within sectors and amongst individual stocks. So I think, their active management well suited to hopefully differentiate as we move forward through this cycle. Globally, I would say on the equity side, there has been underperformance. Valuations are a bit lower. That's interesting. I think the bar, the expectations that are set are also quite low. So within that, strong multinationals that are playing the broader theme that have good exposure to the U.S. economy, that have good exposure to emerging market economies, all look interesting.
We see Latin America as being a region which actually went through this wave of populism that we're seeing in several developed countries, except they did it 10 years ago. And so in several of these countries, we're actually seeing a move away from that. Not in all of them, but in many of them. So if I look at Argentina, Brazil, then you have countries like Mexico, of course, which never really went in that direction. But we've just had an extended period of extremely good policies. So we are in a situation where we're seeing attractive valuations, attractive opportunities in many parts of Latin America in particular, but also other parts of the world.
And back to emerging market equities, and there have been flows into EM equities again. Can you give us a sense of where the prospects are and what risks you see in the emerging market space?
So I think the biggest risk is just panic and distraction. Emerging markets don't get into the news unless something's happening. That's probably pretty negative. And we think that's one of the great advantages of being local, is to kind of be stable, to really know what's going on in the country, and not to be wavering back and forth. I mean, when we look at some of the really bright spots like Latin America, where there's just such positive changes. It's in Peru or in Argentina or in Brazil. There's so much opportunity there. or I'm not a currency expert, but I do travel to these countries all the time. And it's so obvious when you're on the ground that some of these currencies from a purchasing power parity basis are just inexpensive. I think another concern I would have is just developed market uncertainty. What's going to happen in Europe and these other places? But I would caution investors not to spend too much time trying to follow politics all the time. That seems to be the news. And what we're investing in is an earnings stream in companies. And those companies, for the most part, are used to dealing with a lot of volatility. The other issue that keeps coming up for emerging markets is trade. And what a panic there was about trade after the election. But trade is part of what's going on in this world and what we need. And we had a great explosion in trade after the fall of the Soviet Union and the opening up of all of these markets. So it's natural that these countries have to move from expanding on trade to being more local consumption and more technology. If you look at trade between the emerging markets, probably the best example being China trying to develop this One Belt, One Road project where they're looking at all the linkages between the countries. Trade is actually developing in a very different way than where it was just low-cost products in emerging markets being sold to developed markets. And the last two quick things are rising rates. We've just seen that rates are rising, but if you look at emerging markets, we're probably better prepared for rising rates than we've ever been. It's priced into the market. There's no surprise about rates rising. And indeed, in a lot of these emerging markets, because they have had rising inflation, there's some opportunity for, at least internally in those countries, for rates to drop. And that's correlated with a highly predicted rising dollar also, which I think is very much in the market. And emerging markets are more prepared for that than they have been in the past. So that's what I would see as opportunities and risks.
Chris, recently the rally in U.S. fixed income markets across high yield and investment grade has been impressive. Some have questioned valuations here as well. What's your view?
Well, I think Ed laid out some of the dynamics we've seen really for the past probably year plus, and then the most recent leg up post the election. And in fixed income, we've seen some similar moves, particularly in the more equity-like sectors of fixed income, you know, high yield probably being the most equity-like, and that's had the biggest run over that time period. And clearly on a peer valuation standpoint, again, you can make the argument that, oh, are things getting a little bit overvalued? But a couple of things to keep in mind. If we look at the typical valuation metrics, high yield, it's yield spread over treasuries, and that is a bit reduced from long-term averages. But, you know, first of all, the fundamentals as we look forward look to us to be very healthy. We just talked about the economy, but the corporate fundamental outlook looks very good to us. Secondly, if you look historically, sectors like high yield that have traded a bit rich later in the economic cycle have traded rich for a while. And you look at the last couple cycles, high yield can remain at pretty healthy valuations well through the very end of the economic cycle. And we don't see an end to this economic cycle in the near term. So.
Ed, how have recent dynamics in credit markets affected companies' capital allocation decisions?
I think, you know, Chris clearly touched on a lot of these factors. And I mean, just last week, I think one of the all-time record weeks for high yield issuance. So, you know, clearly markets remain very receptive. Investor demand, not just in this recent time period, but really, you know, stepping back over the last several years, tremendous issuance and appetite for corporate debt securities, investment grade, high yield, corporate term loans. And, you know, I think initially, you know, maybe going a bit further back, post-financial crisis, a lot of that issuance was very balance sheet oriented. It was extending debt maturities. It was reducing interest costs, issuing debt into this, you know, continually lower interest rate environment, helped companies bring down, you know, overall interest burdens. But there clearly, you know, was a pivot. And I think back to the kind of thoughts around the equity market, that very kind of low growth rate that we were stuck in many economies, I think companies increasingly turned to the debt capital markets to aid those capital allocation decisions and ultimately to pursue buybacks, to pursue dividends for mm-hmm. shareholders. So, you know, very shareholder friendly. You know, I think as we move forward, there are some important dynamics, you know, particularly if we are in a overall rising interest rate environment, that opportunity as companies now come to look at their capital structures I think they'll find that they were able to issue debt securities at very low interest rates that might stay outstanding for longer. And that dynamic, which existed for a long time, flipped up the other way. I think there are important offsets to the capital allocation policies. Repatriation in the U.S. is going to be, you know, one of the bigger ones. But certainly tax reform, any kind of accelerating growth that generates more earnings and cash flow will all be a part of it. So, you know, I think we take a pretty balanced view that, you know, capital allocation today will be pretty balanced. And you know, I think it'll be important to watch policies that try to encourage more corporate investment in the U.S. But we think dividends, share buybacks will remain, you know, firmly a part of it.
Thank you. So I know you mentioned earlier that many are worried about geopolitics and especially the risks of the elections in Europe this spring. How are you and your team thinking about these risks, and do you still see opportunities investing in global fixed income?
We are taking those risks of populism quite seriously. I'd say relative to when the entire world was focused on the euro area, and this was reflected in yields and exchange rates back during the Eurozone debt crisis, 2011-12, I think that people are underestimating to some extent how important this wave of populism is. Currently, I think the issue is that the driver is such an immediate issue for the average person. It's not something esoteric like budget deficits. It's immigration. And as we know, that is a really basic question. And across Europe, that seems to be the driver right now. We're not suggesting as a baseline that we're going to have a Le Pen victory in France. What is true, though, is that policies in the euro area will have to adjust a little bit for this wave of populism. And in terms of how disruptive it will be, I think the coming few months is going to let us know. Obviously, the most disruptive factor would be if we got the currently unlikely scenario of having a Le Pen victory in France. I mean, she said that she wishes to have a referendum on euro membership, which would pretty much be existential. Now, again, it is not the baseline at all that this is not what we expect, but one has to take it into consideration when making investments. More broadly, across the globe, of course, we are seeing more opportunities. And I think much as Stephen said earlier, I think people are to some extent overestimating the negative or, you know, catastrophic impact of trade policy, because there are still many, many opportunities.
Well, I want to thank the four of you again and thank all of our investors for their continued confidence in Franklin Templeton Investments.
This material is intended to be of general interest only and should not be construed as individual investment advice or a recommendation or solicitation to buy, sell, or hold any security or to adopt any investment strategy. It does not constitute legal or tax advice. The views expressed are those of the investment manager, and the comments, opinions, and analyses are rendered as at publication date and may change without notice. The information provided in this material is not intended as a complete analysis of every material fact regarding any country, region, or market. All investments involve risks, including possible loss of principal. Data from third-party sources may have been used in the preparation of this material, and Franklin Templeton Investments, FTI, has not independently verified, validated, or audited such data. FTI accepts no liability whatsoever for any loss arising from use of this information, and reliance upon the comments, opinions, and analyses in the material is at the sole discretion of the user. Products, services, and information may not be available in all jurisdictions and are offered outside the U.S. by other FTI affiliates and/or their distributors as local laws and regulation permits. Please contact your own professional advisor for further information on availability of products and services in your jurisdiction. Issued in the U.S. by Franklin Templeton Distributors, Inc., 1 Franklin Parkway, San Mateo, California, 94403-1906, 800-DIAL-BEN, or 800-342-5236, franklintempleton.com. Franklin Templeton Distributors, Inc. is the principal distributor of Franklin Templeton Investments, U.S. registered products, which are available only in jurisdictions where an offer or solicitation of such products is permitted under applicable laws and regulation. Investments are not FDIC insured, may lose value, and are not bank guaranteed. Distribution outside the U.S. may be made by Templeton Global Advisors Limited, or other sub-distributors, intermediaries, dealers, or professional investors that have been engaged by Templeton Global Advisors Limited to distribute shares of Franklin Templeton funds in certain jurisdictions. This is not an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to purchase securities in any jurisdiction where it would be illegal to do so. Please visit www.franklinresources.com to be directed to your local Franklin Templeton website. Copyright 2017, Franklin Templeton Investments, all rights reserved.